It's 10 o'clock. This is KBOO Portland, 90.7 FM. The following program has been made possible in part by the KBOO Foundation members and a grant from The Way of Health, a nonprofit health clinic emphasizing internal medicine, including special programs for mental health issues such as depression or anxiety, Chinese medicine, and acupuncture. The Way of Health is located at the corner of Southeast Market at 106th Avenue in Portland. Information at 503-788-4165.
The purpose of this program is not to prescribe a treatment to individuals. Listeners should consult their healthcare practitioner before attempting any treatment.
Good morning and welcome to Health Watch. I'm Dr. David Naiman, your host. Today's guest is Dr. Mark Weisbluth. Dr. Weisbluth is a pediatrician with 32 years of experience and a leading researcher on sleep in children. He founded the original Sleep Disorder Center at Chicago's Children's Memorial Hospital and is a professor of clinical pediatrics at Northwestern University School of Medicine. In addition to his own research, Dr. Weisbluth has written about sleep problems in manuals of pediatrics, lectured extensively to parent groups, and has appeared on Oprah. Dr. Weisbluth is here today to talk about his book, Healthy Sleep Habits and Happy Child. And if you're interested in joining the conversation here on Health Watch, the number is 503-231-8187. And I believe we are still trying to get Dr. Weisbluth on the air. So I'll just mention that one dynamic that often happens on our program, Health Watch, is we start getting calls about halfway through the program, can't get to them all as they pile up near the end. And we get very few at the beginning. So if you are a concerned parent about sleep problems, about incessant crying, this would be an ideal chance to talk to a leading national expert. And again, the number here is 503-231-8187. So I believe we're going to be getting Dr. Weisbluth soon. It looks that way. Also coming up is Pledge Drive in late March, and so this is also a time to give feedback to the station when you have programs that you want us to cover for Health Watch. I believe we have Dr. Weisbluth on the air. Hi. Welcome to Health Watch, Dr. Weisbluth.
Thank you for inviting me.
So I think a real a good place to begin for our listeners is, given the wide variation from person to person, what do you consider to be healthy sleep, or how do you determine what healthy sleep is for a child?
If you look at your child's behavior around 4 or 5 p.m. and you determine that the child is very well rested, calm, attentive, independent, playing, cheerful, most likely your child's well rested. If your child is more clingy or irritable or upset or short-fused or easily frustrated, then there's a good likelihood that this end-of-the-day change in behavior is from sleep deprivation.
So
the general definition of healthy sleep is consolidated sleep. You don't want kids to have fragmented sleep where they're up all the time when they shouldn't be. Sleeping in phase with your biologic rhythms, that would be the timing of sleep, which is age-dependent. And also for kids under 4 years of age, how well they're napping. So if you consider those three major elements, timing of sleep, consolidated sleep, napping, and also duration of sleep as a fourth item, then you can figure out which part of it or parts of it might be off, causing your child to be sleep deprived.
So what would be some of the common mistakes you see with some of your patients when they're trying to deal with a baby who's having trouble establishing healthy sleep patterns?
Well, the common mistakes vary with age. A lot of children, 20% of children who fuss and cry a lot, need constant attention during the first 3 or 4 months of life to soothe themselves to sleep. And then after 4 or 5 months of age, if the parents fail to encourage the child to learn some self-soothing, then that child is at risk, this 20% of kids, for never learning how to soothe themselves to sleep. And then after a while, they become more and more sleep deprived, because after a while, parents don't want to put forth all that soothing effort. If you look at slightly older kids, now we're talking about, you know, all children, around 6 weeks of age, they do need earlier bedtimes, and the failure to establish earlier bedtimes creates sleep deprivation because kids are going to bed too late. And then also, somewhere around 12 to 21 months, children give up their morning nap, and they're more active, and they might need a 10 or 15 or 20 minute earlier bedtime then too, and the failure to do that creates sleep problems. So problems arise at different ages as the sleep schedule changes.
Well, let's start with your first example of the child that needs constant attention, and maybe after several months, either just due to practical reasons for the parents or for fatigue, they're unable to keep that constant attention for the child. What are you recommending to them?
So this child might need an earlier bedtime because they may have defaulted to a position of allowing the child to stay up really late, and then the child crashes. And they may have discovered that. It's the only way they can get some sleep into the child. But that's unhealthy for the child. So they may need to have an earlier bedtime. They may need to have the father get more involved in the soothing to sleep. Because when fathers get involved, the children protest, cry less. Maybe they need to give the child less attention at night. Maybe feed the child two times instead of four times overnight. Maybe they need to work on the timing of naps and not let naps just go all over the board, but to have a reasonably dark, quiet time around 9 a.m., 1 p.m. for naps. Maybe they need to give the child a little less attention at night, either slowly, gradually, using methods such as check and console or graduated extinction where you let the child cry for 5 minutes the first time, 10 minutes the second time. Or maybe a family needs to more abruptly give the child less attention. When kids get less attention at night when they're biologically in a sleep mode, they'll sleep. But the problem is, of course, they may protest, cry if they're older.
So would you agree then that most kids are going to thrive under those circumstances, or would you say that there are different temperaments and maybe some children could more successfully stay up later or not nap, for instance?
When I did research on sleeping that has been published, what's curious is you find that there's a fairly narrow biologic window for the sleep patterns. For example, all children are napping, let's say, two solid naps, mid-morning, midday, up through a year of age. Now, between 12 and 15 months of age, 20% of children will drop their morning nap. And at 15 to 21 months of age, 80% of children will drop their morning nap. But as you get older, these naps have a very narrow range of 1 to 2 hours. And the older you get, the narrower that range is. So children who have 3 or 3.5 hour naps are so far, they're such outliers that, you know, these kids aren't getting enough sleep at night. So a lot of people don't appreciate that. It's just like any other biologic measurement, whether it's blood pressure or healthy cholesterol. The range for health is fairly narrow. It's when you get too little or too high a number that you worry about unhealthy situations.
And would you consider not napping at all an unhealthy situation in a
disastrous. Napping is absolutely necessary in the first few years of life. So my practice, almost all children, close to but not quite 100%, are napping right up through their third birthday. By the fourth birthday, 50% of children are napping about 5 days a week. And by the fifth birthday, it drops down to about 25% of children are napping 4 days a week. So naps decrease after age 3, but in kids who aren't napping under 3, they always pay a price. And the price is alertness, vigilance, concentration, empathy, charm, cheerfulness. And some of these parents don't appreciate that their kids are irritable or fractious because they're not napping. They just think, well, that's their nature. You mentioned the word temperament. There are vast temperament differences. But what I proved or discovered really, you know, 20 years ago, is that sleep is a powerful modulator of temperament. you can have a much easier temperament child if you have a well-rested child. And that was shown at both 4 months of age and then the same group of children at 3 years of age. So during the first 3 years of life, kids who nap well are children who are much easier for parents to manage. Plus, I think they turn out to be smarter kids.
We're talking today with Dr. Mark Weisbluth about his book, Healthy Sleep Habits, Happy Child. If you'd like to join the conversation or ask a question, the number here at HealthWatch is 503-231-8187. So you talk about a term called sleep training, which I'm assuming is a variant on, you know, training a child, potty training. So
I coined the term sleep training when my book came out in 85, based upon the theme of toilet training. And the idea is that parents can help or hinder the process based upon how they approach it. But the truth is that sleep training means different things to different people. A lot of people misunderstand it and think it means you let your child cry when they need to sleep. But sleep training begins on the day you come home from the hospital with your newborn. If you start early, well, that's the first principle, start early, to respect your child's need to sleep by keeping the intervals of wakefulness very brief, like 1 to 2 hours, by trying to put your child down drowsy but awake, and by having a reasonably dark, quiet room, your child will nap better and not get overtired. Once that's in place, then you will have very few sleep problems, if any, and you'll never have to let your child cry.
Let's take our first caller. Welcome to Health Watch. You're on the air.
Hi, I have a question about a little kid sleeping. And one of my friends has a little niece, and they feed her, you know, a few times a day, and then she'll take like about a 3-hour nap. And I was wondering, is that really enough time for a 7-month-old to sleep, or should they be sleeping more?
A single nap a day for a child that age is not healthy. The child needs to have naps mid-morning and midday. In the same way you have and I have and all adults have a slight lull in alertness, a slight drowsy period at 3 or 4 p.m., the children's biologic rhythm for naps is based upon brain maturation. And if you don't follow that rhythm, then the quality of sleep suffers.
Thank you for the call.
Thank you. Have a good day.
Thank you.
So what about what you term as nap-resistant children? How do you go about negotiating or figuring out ways that are natural for getting a child to nap who doesn't want to?
Some children have too much stimulation. There's too much light, noises, action going on that interfere with napping, maybe street noises. Some children are being put down at the wrong times so that they are less able to nap. Some children can't nap because they're going to bed too late at night, they get wired during the day, and they're unable then to nap well. So the key is to look at it on a 24-hour basis and a family situation to figure out why it is, what the cause is for a child not to nap well. Then we'll correct it. And the correction simply involves having a good schedule, leaving the child alone in a reasonably dark, quiet room for an hour will start the naps. The naps will come. In the same way, if we're tired at 3 or 4 p.m. and don't drink coffee and lie down or in a dark, quiet room or in a boring lecture or something, we'll fall asleep. So the key is to let the sleep process surface unimpeded by too much stimulation.
Let's take another caller. Welcome to Health Watch. You're on the air. Hello?
Hello?
Hi, you're on the air.
Oh, yes. I'm curious about the sleep patterns, whatever, of babies and small children. I was wondering if the following affected their sleep patterns. That babies that are born from a C-section, that's an unnatural way of being born. And also, they go in the babies go into a nursery and a hospital. All this technology, I just wonder if that affects them. And also, all these injections babies and after get, I wonder if these things affect their sleep rhythms in their body. I will listen. Thank you.
Thanks for the call.
The short answer is no. whether it's C-section, vaginal delivery, underwater delivery, at-home deliveries, hospital deliveries. All this has been researched very carefully, as well as feeding babies. And then, so you can study populations that have had different prenatal and postnatal birthing experiences and ask the question, do the sleep rhythms mature differently for these kids? And the answer is not at all. The brain matures as this very resilient, powerful force in the same way that kids all start smiling about 6 weeks of age, counting from their due date. So 46 weeks after conception, babies start to make social smiles. You don't see that whether they're C-section birth, vaginal birth, whether mom received pain medicines or didn't receive pain medicines. Kids start smiling at about 46 weeks post-conception. In the same way, sleep patterns emerge. So it's tightly linked to the biologic development of the brain.
Well, how do you counsel your patients on sleep position? I know a lot of parents are anxious about sudden infant death syndrome.
Correct. So the studies have shown clearly that back sleeping reduces the incidence of SIDS. So sleeping on the back is the best. We also now know that for SIDS, we should encourage pacifiers. So we don't know how that reduces SIDS, but that's been observed also. And most kids, the vast majority of kids, will sleep well on their back.
And do you see a genetic component to sleep problems, like a pattern that's carried from parents to their children?
There is a genetic component to sleep patterns. So you can notice the differences between fraternal twins and identical twins. So we know that a lot of sleep is genetically determined. And in my own studies on napping, you see that there's an individual child who's a long napper at 6 months of age, remains a long napper up to 22 months of age. Same thing for short nappers. So for sleep patterns, there's a strong genetic force. But for sleep problems, it's mainly from parents. Parents cause all kinds of sleep problems, not the kid.
We're talking today with Dr. Mark Weisbluth, author of Healthy Sleep Habits, Happy Child. If you'd like to join the conversation, the number is 503-231-8187. So there, Dr. Weisbluth, there are obviously a lot of controversial areas in parenting theories, and I know you mentioned the family bed model and discuss also the idea of unrestricted breastfeeding, and I was hoping you could speak to both of those and what your thoughts were on them.
Sure. The family bed has been associated with increased incidence of SIDS. So the American Academy of Pediatrics actively discourages the family bed. In addition, and separate from SIDS, there are some hazards associated with the family bed, such as the child getting wedged between the bed and the wall, suffocating, a parent who might be impaired from alcohol or drugs rolling over in the child might suffocate the child, a family bed might be associated with soft covers or soft pillows, which might cause suffocation. So the family bed is something to be cautious about because of its hazards, and to prevent the risk of SIDS, parents can get a co-sleeper, which is like a small crib attached to the bed. So the child is close to the family. Mom might breastfeed them whenever the child stirs, but the child's not actually in the bed with the parents. And there's nothing wrong with that. And prior to the idea of family bed being dangerous for SIDS, I had no problem with the family bed. So children whose parents want the family bed will sleep well and not necessarily have any problems. There's a separate issue, though, in parents who did not want the family bed, but they default to that family bed as a short-term solution to solve sleep problems. For example, you have a colicky baby who can't sleep anywhere except in the bed close to the mom, and this is a way in which some families can get some sleep, but the parents don't like it. If the parents don't pay attention to the kid sleeping when the colic passes at 3 or 4 months of age, the continuation of family bed then becomes a problem. So it's not, you can't just say it's good or bad. It depends on how it's used and what the intention is of the family. The most common mistake with the family bed is the child, after 4 months of age, is kept up too late, and the family goes to sleep too late with the child. And now the child is getting sleep deprived from a too late of a bedtime. And the solution to that is simple. The parents put the child to bed early in the family bed. The child is moved to a co-sleeper where it's safe. And then the mom or dad get out of the bed until they themselves later that night are ready to go to sleep. So if you have an early bedtime in place, there's nothing wrong with the family bed.
Let's take another caller. Welcome to Health Watch. You're on the air.
Hello?
Hello, you're on the air.
Okay, excellent. Thanks. Well, my child is 16 years old now. I wonder if the doctor has any advice for me. We're from a divorced family now, but as a child, I was always really careful about her napping times, but her father wasn't, and he would keep her up late. And now she's developed a late stay-up-at-night pattern. Any suggestions?
All teenagers in the United States and in other highly developed countries are sleep-deprived. Teenagers have to start school too early. Teenagers have too much homework pressure. Many teenagers work too long after school and for jobs. So the United States and other countries don't allow teenagers to get the rest they need. It's a tricky situation because we know that sleep deprivation in teenagers is associated with more marijuana use, alcohol use, motor vehicle accidents, so teenagers, and depression. So teenagers who really are sleep deprived not only do poorly in school, but they're at risk for other problems. It's a matter of degree, though. And some teenagers do pretty well on not enough sleep. The question you want to ask yourself is, how much is sleep loss impairing my child's functioning academically, socially, athletically? And sometimes you need to talk to either a physician or social worker or psychologist to get a good handle on whether not sleeping enough is part of my child's problems. And if it is, then it's correctable. Mainly by letting these children sleep more on weekends, occasionally being strict about early bedtimes. This is as best as you can do that. Or cutting back on some of the activities if the child is just overburdened by being overscheduled.
Okay. Thank you.
You're welcome.
Thanks for the call. You do have a section in your book that talks about dealing with special transitions, and I would imagine one of the common ones being mothers, when they return to work, if it's a household where both parents are going to work, what do you have any special advice for parents around that time for their infants?
The big dilemma is you come home from work, mom or dad or both, and you dearly miss your child. You want to be with your child. You haven't seen your child at 4 or 5 p.m., so you're not sure how happy or sleep-deprived the child behaves. But, of course, when you walk in the house, the child is thrilled to see you, and this masks any sleep deprivation that might be there. This leads then to the temptation to keep your child up late to play with your child. What happens is if the child's kept up too late, though, if that occurs, is that then eventually you start to see bedtime battles, night waking, and a stressed marriage because the parents themselves aren't enjoying each other's company late at night trying to put their kid to sleep. So a lot of families have morning time with their child. A lot of parents who travel a lot, work outside the home, in my practice, see their kids in the mornings, on weekends, but they might come home from work late depending on traffic or commuting and not see their child because the child goes to bed before they do. And for the family, this is the best thing possible to make sure they're well rested for the marriage, for the child, even though a parent might not see their child at night. This sounds a little bit harsh, but it's biologically important for the child to sleep in the same way it's biologically important for the child to get the calcium he or she needs for bone growth.
And are there, I'm assuming there are quite a few studies on the long-term effects of sleep deprivation in small children?
The good studies, because we don't experimentally sleep-deprive children that are young, but we do experimentally sleep-deprive adult volunteers. We do experimentally sleep-deprive animals at different ages, okay? So it wouldn't be ethical to sleep deprive a 3 or 4 year old. So all our studies are based upon adult sleep deprivation, animal sleep deprivation, but even 10 to 14 year old children who are experimentally sleep deprived only 1 hour at night fail to perform well on what's called executive functions. Executive functions means organization and planning. They do work well, they read, they talk, they memorize, they do arithmetic well. But 10 to 14-year-old children who are cut off of their sleep 1 hour early poorly perform on sophisticated tests. So if you think of children starting school, they're learning colors, they're learning words, they're learning arithmetic, they're learning how to read. It's not until 10 to 14 years that they're expected to do more than one thing at a time, to organize and plan activities. We might call it multitasking. And when you're sleep-deprived, that's where you really fall down. So behaviorally, we know that children who get the sleep they need compared to those that don't behave better socially, emotionally, but academically, the real proof shows up later.
And you do also have, I just wanted to mention briefly before we finish today, that you do have a section on special problems like sleepwalking and night terrors and,
yes,
and bedwetting. And maybe we can just use bedwetting since it's a relatively common problem. And you could briefly talk about some of the techniques you deal with.
What we know is that children who are sleep deprived partially compensate by having some extra deep sleep periods, during which time they might wet. So by going to bed earlier, these kids will be drier because they don't have such deep sleep periods. You see this a lot on vacations when it's natural for families to keep their kids up late, have fun, but then they get overtired and then they're wet. And it's not because they're out of home, it's just because they got overtired.
Well, maybe you could point our listeners to where they can find your book, Healthy Sleep Habits, Happy Child, and if there are any web resources that you're familiar with that people could read up more about it too, that would be great.
We have on our website, which is www.sweetbabies.com, information on sleeping. We also have the book, Healthy Sleep Habit, Happy Child, which goes from infancy through adolescence, paperback. There's a hardback edition which just came out in 05, spring of 05. And the introduction to this hardback is the first time in any parenting book that explains why some parents want to do what's best for their child in sleeping and can't do it. And the reason they can't do it is some parents have things like depression, ADHD, chaotic lifestyles, or they just don't have the tools to understand the importance of sleeping, or they have a bad marriage. The list is not that long, but if parents don't deal with these problems first, then it's almost impossible to correct it or help a child sleep well. So it really is a family issue. The other book is called Your Fussy Baby, and that's on those 20% of children who really don't sleep well at all in the first 3 or 4 months of life, out of whom we see many of the common sleep problems when they're older. And this helps you get through those first 3 or 4 months of life and prevent sleep problems from emerging. And I think that's probably one of the most important points I can make, is that you can actually prevent, in all children, sleep problems if you're able to be sensitive to your child's sleeping needs from the beginning.
Well, thanks for being here on Health Watch today, Dr. Weisbluth.
Oh, you're welcome. Thank you for inviting me.
We were talking today with Dr. Mark Weisbluth, the author of Healthy Sleep Habits, Happy Child. Stay tuned for Scott Forrester and Monday on the Environment.